Welcome to another episode of Ordinary Old Catholic Me. Today's program, the state of my state. No, I do not mean the state of California where I live, although that could be an episode of its own, a podcast of its own. Actually, I'm pretty sure somebody or many somebodies are doing programs right now on the state of the state of California. A small digression. That state, the state of California, it is pretty lousy right now. Just two things are emblematic of just how bad is the state of California, the place I once so loved as near paradise on earth when I came here as a young adult, are that it is a proud sanctuary state for the sacrifice of children by abortion, and that just this last week or so, the governor, who will no doubt run for president so he can help the rest of the country become California, signed a bill that allowed for human bodies, late human bodies, of course, to become compost. Soylent Green, here we come. No, I'm talking about the state of my state, spiritually mostly, which, of course, encompasses the whole of a person. I do have to say that the state of the state and of the nation, though, are big contributors to the struggle of my spirituality as, and that's, again, one of the reasons I do this podcast. I am more than guessing that some of you who listen, and an enormous number that do not, find that their lives generally and their spiritual lives are being deeply impacted by the insanity that is now defining our society. It makes it hard to keep one's eyes focused on the Creator and to remember that we have been redeemed by the acts of crucifixion and resurrection. You look around and it sure doesn't feel like it. I mean, that we've been redeemed and that we get the chance again, which we had lost, to get into heaven by following His way. A couple of podcasts ago, I told you about my summer retreat, the Ignatian Retreat. I came back fueled with spiritual gas. I managed to continue some of the things I had learned while I was away for a week, doing the Holy Hour, doing the Rosary regularly, which I had started before, but becoming more regular still. But as the reality of my world and daily life closed back in, I discovered, which I know I have shared, a most stupefying resistance within me. I always clarify that by nature, I'm a glass half-empty girl, prone to a gloomier view of life, and that recognizing the paradox that I am a practicing Catholic, whom one might expect to be more optimistic and hopeful. I suppose my nature is part of my cross, and that's part of the work of being Catholic, accepting but then embracing the cross that I have. But there are some practical things I needed to do in order not to abandon the small progress I had made from the retreat. I'm a fairly well-formed, or informed. I don't know if I'm well-formed, but I am a well-informed American. I know what is going on in the world and in the nation, that insanity I have referenced, and it was beginning to so burden my head and heart that I realized I needed to step away, as probably much planned by our leaderships worldwide, not all, but many. The constant hammering of bad news, the stock market, the Ukraine, the manufactured energy crises, the calculated excommunication of God from any moral consideration of life was really beginning. No, it wasn't just beginning. It really was oppressing me such that I was implicitly seeing no purpose in my struggling to look for God, who, of course, is right there through the fogs of our own creation. One thing I had to do was to step away from the constant barrage of dark and continuous information. I know that what is happening is probably hurtling us towards the end times, as so much of human history has been doing, and that is what makes my paying attention to God and His plan for me in the plan of this time in which I find myself more urgent. One thing I have maintained since my return from the retreat, probably one of the only things, is that I do not listen to news or news shows or talk radio when I'm in bed or going to bed. During the day, I do a sweep of information using my phone's apps, but I try not to stay too long on the cacophony of twisted voices. I have to know what's going on. I have obligations in the world. I'm a voter. I make my little contributions to the public weal. But the seepage of the darkness and human attraction to it has made it necessary for me to step away in order to reorient myself and not to fall into some kind of dark emotional, spiritual, and physical vortex. Despite that effort over the last month or two, it has been like pushing the proverbial boulder of Sisyphus, an image I've always liked. It's always seemed apt about life. Up the hill, only to have it roll back on me, just struggling to engage in prayer, in meditation, in anything. I've tried to apply Rule 5 of the Rules of Discernment in Ignatian practice. There are 14 rules related to the two standards for which we have a choice, that of God and that of the devil. That is, when there is desolation, which effectively seems to be what has been happening to me, that you don't change anything in your already extant prayer life. I have continued to try to do the praying and the hour and the rosary as before, often highly distracted, more than I've ever been, often not being able to do it for the actual full hour of the holy hour, reading things and saying, what does this have to do with me or saving my soul? But as they say in the rules, it certainly feels as if the devil has been biting at my heels. Now, what would I be doing if I gave it up, if I stopped praying and no longer sought with God's grace to trust God? It's not like I'd be out living a wild life, eat, drink, and be merry, for tomorrow we die sort of stuff, and that I don't care about an afterlife, whether it exists or not. No, I would be living the same life, but without seeking Him, who, despite all the distractions and the propagandas of human beings in my core, I sense is there. And that, when I have my rational moments and the light of God continues to be something I can actually see, that would be untenable. How would that be better? The world would still be the world, the burdens would still be the burdens, and I would be completely adrift amid all of it with no hope. So, that's not an option for me. Well, it's an option, just not a good one as far as I can see. It's like surrendering to the enemy in battle. And then I remember the fact of Catholics are part of the church militant. And I remember that Archangel Michael is armored and carries a sword with which he defeated Lucifer himself. That's what this is. That's what it always was. It's just that what was before, when you and I were younger, the thunder of war was farther away from us, and so we felt no great need to prepare ourselves for battle. But now the cannons have rumbled up to our front doors, and we have two choices, to fight or to surrender. The first part of the fight is interior. It is within us. It is within me. And then the second part of the fight is to go out and to evangelize, to show what the truth is, and hope that some others who are, let's call it the dark side, a la Star Wars, but the dark side here is Lucifer, that those people will come back having seen what is true. Well, that is a very long preface, but the preface is an inherent part of the tale for all of us, how we assess our mortal and spiritual state and how we train for the battle that was always coming, but now is imminent. Am I to run or am I to stand with Him, with God? Now, truth is, I want to run. I always want to run, and that is precisely why sticking with the prayer life is essential, so that when the final test comes, and it always does for each of us, if not for the whole complement of mankind, that I will not run, that however creaky and tattered and pounding of heart I am, this ordinary Catholic will be standing with our Lord. So, to do that, I have to go against my nature, and I can't do that without His hand on my back. That's what all these practices are intended to foster, that I feel His hand and that I persevere. I might have mentioned that a month or so after the retreat, I was assigned a spiritual director that I had requested. I may have also told you that I previously had a spiritual director, but long before I ever attempted the Ignatian exercises, and I realize now that I wasn't ready for a spiritual director, in that I really wasn't doing the work outside of direction that would make the guidance meaningful. This time, I think I get the interplay between my work and the guidance of the director. And by the way, just for a general piece of information, any master retreat person will say that the main spiritual director is the Holy Spirit. And we always ask Him, Father Broom used to say this at the retreat, you always ask Him to be with us along with the Blessed Virgin, the Mother of our Lord. But the persons that I am going to, the person I'm going to, is among the individuals, men and women, priests, nuns and laity, who are trained in the process of guiding people, directing them in the seeking of their Christian life, fully in the midst of the lot of things that interferes with it. They are ordinary, like me, but with a skill set that I do not yet have and may never have. I met mine, telephonically, about a month and a half after the retreat, and in the month or so since the director was assigned and we had our first discussion, my, let's call it the mood to run, to give up, really came upon me with a vengeance. A part of it was and is that in spiritual direction, you as a directee are seeking and being shown how to. Now I realize that those who either have no belief or are compartmentalized in having a belief might cringe at what I'm about to say, that we're being guided to, that we may learn, get on the path of, and stay on the path of learning to love God, to be in constant communion and relationship with God, to become holy, and to save our souls so that we can be with Him forever. Even when I say it to you, other believers, it sounds just a little this side of crazy. But for me, as I see the direction of the world today, amid the long history of the world, of which the Bible itself is a prime testament, I feel God's hand, I think, saying, persist, even if you feel absolutely nothing of me, I am here. Your job is to listen to me, audire, from whence comes the word obedience. Just as had happened just before I was going on the retreat, when the time for me to speak a second time to my spiritual director, I thought, why bother? I just had a lousy month of trying to pray the holy hour. What's the point? Ah, you know how the rules of discernment help here? Because it begs you to ask, whose voice is that? Is it in my head? Is it in me? Well, yeah, but it's coming from somewhere else, and it is not good. So, we spoke, my director and me, and yesterday was the first day of consolation that I have had in over a month, spiritually speaking. Oh, I know that part of the rules is that desolation will be back, and actually today is back, not with a vengeance, but it's lurking. But what I saw is that this direction is about development of a program for me in which I can best access, with God's grace, His love and mercy. I think I was pretty honest with my director about the obstacles, some of which I'm sharing with you now, And by the end of our time together, the director had helped me see some ways to address my, for example, inability to pray the whole hour. I'll share this one insight that came from my spiritual director. And it's not something I've never heard before, but as things are presented to you in slightly different ways, it sometimes changes everything and makes it more effective an insight. God is waiting for us. He's not giving me or you a demerit because I can't pray 1 hour with him, though, like Jesus in the garden, he profoundly wants us with him. Now, I wait all the time for all sorts of things. Can't I just wait and be with him for 1 hour? I should aim for the hour always, but if I'm there only 15 minutes, okay, there's no penalty. I have indeed been with him 15 minutes. And even if I cannot voice the prayers or meditate, or even if I feel absolutely nothing having been there for my time with him, it was still time spent with him, God. The question I must ask myself, am I there only for what he can give me, or am I there for him? Even if nothing is happening, stay. Any disappointment I am having or incapacity is not coming from God. Look to a favorite saint, it was suggested. Remember, there is a saint or a few saints for all of us. They are as diverse as the rest of us. They are human beings who went through what we are. We tend to come at everything from our perspective of self. Me, me, me. As long as everything is going the way I want, the way I need, I'm okay. Otherwise, I'm out of here. And that is precisely what we are looking to let go of. The self, in order to have a meaningful relationship as creatures with the Creator. We have lots of things we tell ourselves and tell God, by which we insanely and pridefully, like Lucifer did, say that we are equal to him, to God, and that we have a right to challenge how things are. It just happened that this past week, the first reading of each day was from the book of Job. One of the things done in holy hours is to read passages from the Bible, see what jumps out at you, what speaks to you as a reader. Job has always spoken to me one way or the other, the whole book, pieces of the whole book as well. People always say in critiquing the book of Job that it is not about a real person in history. It's a myth. It's a fiction. Oh, but it is about a real person. It's about me. It's about you. Your story may not be Job's. Your whole family may not have been wiped out. You may not have boils all over your body. But isn't it interesting that his story, his so-called fictional story, always speaks to our particular burdens in which we inevitably yell, "Why me, Lord?" Part of what you do is you do this thing called a revision after you've read the sections of readings that are for the day or that you're otherwise reading. And I was writing down two things, two lines from the book of Job reading for the day, which was yesterday, Friday. And here are the two. One is from the Douay Rheims. I'm going to read the one from the Douay Rheims and the one from the Ignatius text because they're slightly different, but equally powerful. So here's one from Job 38, chapter 38. And God says to Job at the end of his complaining, of his lamenting, he doesn't question God per se, but he is lamenting. God says to him, "Who is this that wrappeth up sentences in unskillful words?" And then he also says to him, "Wilt thou make void my judgment and condemn me that thou mayest be justified?" In the Ignatius Bible, it is, "Who is this that darkness counsels by words without knowledge?" And then, "Will you condemn me that you may be justified?" Hey, there's chutzpah telling the God who created heaven and earth and you that, "Hey, I don't like what you did, how you did it. Terrible." I have this image of just me and God, kind of like in Job. It's just Job and God. For all the people in the world, past, present and future, really, it is just each of us and God when it comes down to it. When we go before Him in judgment, we will stand individually before Him, He having given us enormous numbers of opportunities to see Him as He is, the Lord of the universe. And we deciding whether to usurp His role, demanding that He give us more than He already did by creating us. The phrase that always comes to mind is, for me, He is God and I am not. That's when I'm being rational and not being so totally self-centered. I want to understand that in all its fullness and respond to that reality that He is God and that I am not, in a love that I sometimes think I am incapable of, and that before I'm standing before Him being asked what I have done in this life or failed to do. I wonder how it will play when I, the creature, try to justify myself in front of God and say, "Hey, God, you just didn't get it right. Good luck to me." And it's not because God looks to punish me. It's because I didn't ever get it. Right now, scientists are trying to explain the origin of the universe without God's hand so that they and we can further justify ourselves. I think before I close this program, this podcast, I'll read more of Job here, because the part after he asks Job, "Who is this that wrappeth up sentences in unskillful words?" God gives a litany of what He has done versus Job's life and what Job has done as a creature. It kind of strikes me, as I read this before, that we are kind of silly creatures in that the level of pride we have in the face of what is so patently awesome is plain absurd. We darken His counsel by our words without knowledge, thinking that we can out-knowledge God by an act of our wills. Let me pretend that God is actually speaking to me and not just Job here. He says, "Gird up thy loins like a man. I will ask thee, and answer thou me. Where wast thou when I laid the foundations of the earth? Tell me if thou hast understanding. Who hath laid the measures thereof, if thou knowest? Or who hath stretched the line upon it? Upon what are its bases grounded? Or who laid the corner stone thereof? When the morning stars praised me together, and all the sons of God made a joyful melody, who shut up the sea with doors when it broke forth as issuing out of the womb? When I made a cloud the garment thereof, and wrapped it in a mist as in swaddling bands, I set my bounds around it, and made it bars and doors, and I said, Hitherto thou shalt come, and shalt go no further, and here thou shalt break thy swelling waves. Did thou, since thy birth, command the morning, and show the dawning of its day in place? And didst thou hold the extremities of the earth, shaking them, and hast thou shaken the ungodly out of it? The seal shall be restored as clay, and shall stand as a garment. From the wicked their light shall be taken away, and the high arm shall be broken. Hast thou entered into the depths of the sea, and walked in the lowest parts of the deep? Have the gates of death been opened to thee, and hast thou seen the darksome doors? Hast thou considered the breadth of the earth? Tell me, if thou knowest all things, where is the way where light dwelleth, and where is the place of darkness, that thou mayest bring everything to its own bounds, and understand the paths of the house thereof? Didst thou know then that thou shouldst be born, and didst thou know the number of thy days? Hast thou entered into the storehouses of the snow, or hast thou beheld the treasures of the hail, which I have prepared for the time of the enemy against the day of battle and war? By what way is the light spread and heat divided upon the earth? Who gave a course to violent showers, or a way for noisy thunder, that it should rain on the earth without man in the wilderness where no mortal dwelleth, that it should fill the desert and desolate land, and should bring forth green grass? Who is the father of rain, or who begot the drops of dew? Out of whose womb came the ice, and the frost from heaven who hath gendered it. The waters are hardened like a stone, and the surface of the deep is congealed. Shalt thou be able to join together the shining stars, the Pleiades, or canst thou stop the turning about of Arcturus? Canst thou bring forth the day star in its time, and make the evening star to rise upon the children of the earth? Dost thou know the order of heaven, and canst thou set down the reason thereof on the earth? Canst thou lift up thy voice to the clouds, that an abundance of waters may cover thee? Canst thou send lightnings, and will they go, and will they return, and say to thee, Here we are? Who hath put wisdom in the heart of man, or who gave the cock understanding? Who can declare the order of the heavens, or who can make the harmony of heaven to sleep? When was the dust poured out on the earth, and the clods fastened together? Wilt thou take the prey for the lioness, and satisfy the appetite of her whelps? When they couch in the dens, and lie in wait in holes? Who provideth food for the raven, when her young ones cry to God, wandering about because they have no meat? You get the picture. Now, I know that there are probably people, they're probably not listening to this podcast, but there are people who think, oh, science, indeed, we'll figure all of this out. We'll be able to answer all those questions of God. But you know what I was thinking of as I was reading? I was thinking of the Tower of Babel and how we've tried that sort of thing before, trying to bring ourselves to God, to be God. Anyway, that's a whole other story. So, the state of my spiritual state today, struggling. But today, just for today, I will recognize, in a way that I fail to recognize generally, that it is me, the creature, speaking to the Creator, and really let that try to sink in. I'll let you know how it goes. Thank you for listening to another episode of Ordinary Old Catholic Me. And as much as I really want you to listen, and I do, it kind of gives me encouragement to keep going, because I think in many ways this program does as much for me as it might, I hope, do for somebody else. And that is sort of help me through my struggles, along with that prayer and aspiration towards God.